Skokie County Supervisors will convene an open session. Good morning. We're going to have council do a report on close.
Yes, we went into closed session at 8:35. We came out at 10:05. From 9:19 to 10:03, we dealt with a flood control matter. During that period, at 9:48 to 9:51, Supervisor Valenzuela stepped out. And from 9:51 to 9:53, Supervisor Cops have stepped out. That's it.
Thank you. And we will be going back into closed later, you know, today. So before I start the public comment, I want to let everybody know that I know most of you want to talk about the vaccine mandate. We do have a letter for approval on our agenda today under consent agenda. We're going to listen to you first, and then when we get to the consent agenda, I'm going to pull out items to the board to discuss our intentions. So with that, looking to Pastor Bradley for the invocation.
Father, we're grateful to be here today to be able to conduct business of the county. We take a moment and remember all of our firefighters who are busy even today, and we know that it's been a tragic season all across our state and the western states. We lift up our firefighters and all of our first responders in what they're doing. We're truly grateful for the efforts that they put forth for our protection. Now today I pray for this body that is assembled together. We thank you for the leaders that you've given us in our county. You've blessed us with good leaders. We appreciate their hard work. And Father, today we are able to see our government truly at work in our nation as we have the freedom to come and speak about the things that matter to us. I just pray, God, that all things will be said carefully and in decent form. And Father, that we'll be reminded of one another and we care about others in all that we're doing. Thank you for this session today. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
All right, moving to item six.
I need to do roll call.
I'm sorry.
Present in the House, Supervisor Chris.
Yes.
Supervisor Cobbseth.
Here.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yes.
Supervisor Ogren.
Present.
And Supervisor Howe.
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy. So, and, I just have somebody to keep me straight.
Here. And I just got to make my quick announcement, too. I'm sorry. The board will be convening today as the Flood Control and Water Conservation District and receives no additional compensation. Thank you.
Thank you. It's voluntary. Presentations from the public, item six. This time slots for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You will be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. The chair can extend that to 5 minutes for appropriate circumstances, but I will say that we have a lot of people that want to speak today, so please try and respect the 3 minutes, especially if you're going to repeat the previous presenter. Approval of consent item, written comments can be presented if so desired by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. And when addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments. Please address the board as a whole through the chair, and comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of this board. I think I'm going to go to the in-house speakers first. And the first card I have is Susan Miller of Hornbrook. I didn't see you here, but I guess you're here somewhere. Good morning. You come up to the podium here.
Is there a microphone?
Yes,
it's
right here.
And the microphone so people online can hear you.
My name is Susan Miller from Hornbrook, and I'm here to support our democracy, that we have freedom of choice. And I see this as a slippery slope. If all state employees and healthcare workers, and next it's going to be these workers and those workers, And I just feel like we could slip into a medical tyranny, and I want to have my freedom of my body, my choice. What happened to that? So that's where I'm at. Thank you for being willing to write a letter and stand up to the state.
Applause eats a lot of time. Next, I'm sorry, it's Gravette. B-R-Y-C-H. I can't quite read what was written here. Don't you know that?
Kevin? Brian?
That's me.
It's hard to write on your leg, probably.
Yeah. it was in the hand. It happens.
Sure.
Thank you for being here, guys, listening to this. I'm here to represent the youth of Siskiyou County, at least those of us that stand for independent liberties and freedoms. I'd like to thank all of you guys for setting a good example for us, for being able to stand up to the state and writing the letter. And, you know, as the youth really look upon the older generations to kind of give us good examples on kind of how to lead, how to do things, because eventually we know we're going to be filling these positions ourselves. And we need to stand up for every individual and make sure that they know that their choices are theirs and that tyranny will not reign over them. And also, my mother is a hospital worker, and so this matter is very dear to me now. But if it doesn't stop now, when is it going to stop? So, on behalf of the youth, I'd like to thank you guys for writing the letter to the state.
Thank you. Bill Harris.
Hi, I'm Jill Harris. I'm a registered nurse at Fairchild. It's my pleasure to care for our community, and it's a career that I worked toward very, very hard. And it's a concern of mine now that I possibly am going to have to, make the choice to either stay with my career and do something that is against my choice, or give it up. And I appreciate the opportunity to come and share my views. Thank you.
Thank you. looks like Randy Dila.
My name is Randy Dila. I live in Fort Jones. I am also an RN at Fairchild Medical Center. I work in different departments throughout the hospital. My concern today, and with what is going on with this statewide mandate of vaccination, are twofold. I'm not sure the numbers of county healthcare workers that are currently unvaccinated. With our healthcare system currently being burdened and crippled and understaffed, losing so many more staff members is going to totally cripple our hospitals, especially in this rural area all throughout the state, not only through the state, but through the United States, leaving so many people uncared for. This is going to cause, I believe, more undue burden on patients than what I believe COVID actually will, not being able to get the care they need in a timely manner. Currently, it takes, for a critical transfer that I was trying to do in the hospital the other day to UCSF, 3 to 6 weeks wait time. Okay, there is no hospitals that are taking patients right now. It's a bad situation that's about to get much, much worse for our public. I want to continue to care for these people. I see homeless people on the streets. I see people that need these care, and I just tear up every time I see them, knowing they're not going to get care, anybody. So where does that leave us as far as being able to care for our community, our state, and our nation if a third of the people walk away from their jobs or are terminated? That's my concern. That's...
Thank you.
We're looking to you for help, you guys.
Matt Brooks.
I'm sure the board all knows who I am, but my name is Matt Brooks. I'm from Wairika. I'm here as a private citizen today to express my concerns about this vaccine mandate. I have three kids that are all in a position to either have to make a choice of getting an experimental vaccine or lose their job. Two of them are in the military, one is in special forces training right now. One is a commander of a National Guard unit, and my daughter is here today, and she is an RN. They all have tremendous amounts of time, money, and sacrifice invested in their careers, and they now have to make that choice. How would you like to have to make that choice? Because you're next. This is a foot-in-the-door situation, and we're all going to be forced with this decision, whether or not we can enter the hospital, whether or not we can enter a grocery store, whether or not we can go to a movie. We have to show our papers, Schweinbund. That is what Nazi Germany was like. I'm glad that you guys have written a letter, and I hope that this letter is not just a complaint to the governor, but it is a clear decision on your part, exercising every ounce of authority you have as the Board of Supervisors to prevent this from happening in Siskiyou County. If we don't make a stand now, there will be no place to make a stand. We have voted you in to represent us. Here are the people in front of you today. Please do our bidding. Thank you.
Hey guys, I'm Courtney Hansen. I'm very so emotional right now, and I'm usually not a public speaker, so please forgive me. I just want to be a voice for not only myself, but for other nurses and healthcare workers that I just adore and love so much, that I'm blessed to work alongside and watch the difference that each and every person that's within our healthcare system makes from the entering of a hospital in the ER all the way through transitioning care to discharge. There are so many people that won't be there anymore if this mandate is passed. I will speak firmly and be very honest that I will not receive the vaccine, and it saddens me so much to think that I will be leaving a career that I love. I found my calling, and I love what I do, and it's a very, I don't want to say easy decision, but that is the decision I will make, and I'll stand firm in that. And I'm confident. Randy already talked mostly. I don't want to repeat what Randy said about all of our, we're just so afraid of what this mandate will do to our community, especially. We have such limited resources here, and the amount of staff that will leave because of this mandate, I just fear will cripple our healthcare system in Siskiyou County. Myself and so many other healthcare workers in Siskiyou County are just asking for the right to choose. We're just asking for the right to informed consent. And my prayer is that, just like Matt said, that you guys will stand firm with us and just let us make our own decisions for our own bodies. And I just thank you guys for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for hearing us today. I'm with Immunity from Tyranny, representing lots of different people. Basically, I kind of wanted to say that communism looks at the collective. America looks at the individual. And it's so important to protect our rights to medical freedom, to informed consent, so that we can make decisions for our own bodies the way that we see fit. This mandate did change on August 5th. They made it where you no longer have the option for the COVID testing, that you just have to get the vaccine. Medical exemptions and religious exemptions are very difficult to get. I've been told that with my employer, that not only do I have to fill out paperwork and possibly have a letter from my pastor, I also have to have it approved by somebody who's very pro-vax. So it's making it very difficult for people to have exemptions. So an exemption is not an easy way out on this. And not only that, you know, there's other people that are not heavily religious that deserve a freedom of choice with their bodies. So just the heavily religious get a choice on health freedom? Just people that are, you know, have medical problems, just they're the only ones that get a choice. I don't think so. So I'm here standing up against this mandate. There's at least 40 to 50 people that I'm aware of with our Fairchild system that will likely quit because they're not going to stand for this mandate. They're not going to get it. So that's really going to cripple our system, as other people have stated. I'm also concerned with what's coming down the pipe for the kids. That's what I'm concerned with too. You know they're going to mandate it for the kids in the fall. If they're being this tough right now, you know they're going to do that. And recently, the hospital came up with new restrictions where a visitor that comes with a patient has to either be proof that they're vaccinated or they have to have within 72 hours, they have to have a negative COVID test. So let's say that someone goes into the ER with their disabled person that they care for and they're not vaccinated. They can't go in with that disabled person and make sure that they get good care. And that's ridiculous. So, and we are very much in this county, we're very much for patient care and for individual choice. Everybody deserves a choice. What else can I say here? So I said most of my important points. The media tells us doom and gloom and gets us all scared. We should not give up our freedoms just because the propaganda is giving us fear. Okay? We deserve to have freedom. We're in America. We need to stand up against this state. We are the state of Jefferson. We're Siskiyou County. We push back against this stuff. We're for freedom. Please stand with us. This violates the Nuremberg Code, which gives us informed consent, which I'm sure you're aware of. We all deserve a choice. We all have different perspectives on vaccines. We just deserve choice. Everybody deserves a choice. That's all I'm saying. No mandates. No mandates. Thank you.
Make this short and sweet. I'm Don McIntosh, and I am well read on both sides of this vaccine, and over the last 2 years, and I absolutely against it. It's been ruled as a perfect killing machine, killing tool, and I am not going to be vaccinated. And that's a fact. We have two grandkids that are. Honor students graduated from Davis and Cal Poly. They were forced into this vaccine and they were just sick about it because they're terminal, you know, really. And so that's all I have to say. And if, you know, that's all I have to say. I'm against the mandate.
Daniel Simon, Myrica, and thank you, supervisors, for protecting us from things the state would wish to impose upon our liberties. Here is an update. I want to give this, I guess, to Wendy.
Is there enough for everybody?
Yeah. I'm here to give an update on the Dominion election system, and I do again thank you guys that, to my understanding, you have not funded the Dominion yet. I haven't seen it on the agenda. So, as you know, I've, and by the way, that's lighter reading than what I have provided in the past, you know, 60 plus pages, and yeah, light reading, there you go. Okay, so anyway, I did send a records request to Laura Bynum, and I've been asking for the certification documents from the Secretary of State, because it's my understanding per state law, the entire system has to be approved, which includes the microprocessor, the hard drive, all third-party components and software. I have not received from Laura Bynum a certification of these specific additional components from my records request dated around June 15th. But I discovered something last night that I wanted to bring to your attention in my light reading. Election Code 19230, the elections official of any county or city using a voting system shall inspect the machines or devices at least once every 2 years to determine their accuracy. Any county or city using leased or rented equipment shall determine if the equipment has been inspected for accuracy, and then the election official sends a certification result to the Secretary of State. So, Siskiyou County used the Dominion vote system first in the 2016 June primary, and then the biannual inspection or report certifications that would be necessary for the following years of 2018 and 2020. Is County Clerk Laura Bynum or staff qualified to perform an inspection of such a complex system? Is she a computer programmer? Any qualified computer technicians in the clerk's office? Do also know that in the Dominion contract, it does not allow the election official or anybody to inspect their machines, third-party components, third-party software, or firmware. Sure, a logic and accuracy test is performed, but this is designed by Dominion. If this is the case, then can a building contractor direct the building inspector to only inspect one corner of a house under construction? It would be, and by the way, if the state's requiring an inspection, but the contract says you can't inspect it, we have a conflict here. The Dominion contract says you can't look at our machine. State says you have to. It's kind of frustrating. But anyway, the conclusion is that it would be good to see the biannual inspection reports and or the certifications from the Siskiyou County election official. And I guess you can read the last sentence or two, but I just want to update you.
Thank you.
Hittinger. So I'm Ron Hittinger. I'm a Siskiyou County resident. I live in Lee, California, and I'm here to address the board. I'm a father. I've also been a firefighter in the community for over 12 years. I went back to school and became a diagnostic medical sonographer to, you know, be at home with my family and watch my kids grow up. So I'm here to address the mandate. And the questioning behind the safety and efficacy of this vaccine, what we know from the VAERS reporting system is that, in fact, it's not safe. You know, the recent report came out July 30th, and we have 540-something thousand adverse events reported through VAERS, okay, on that. We have 12,000 deaths attributed to COVID-19 vaccination. We have around 70 or 80,000 serious illness reports adverse, the ones that affect you the rest of your life, leaving you disabled, okay? These people have no recourse to hold anyone accountable for this vaccine if they come down with something that affects their life, okay? We also just noticed that American Frontline Doctors filed a Supreme Court suit against the HHS, Xavier Becerra, who runs our Health and Human Service Department, who in fact is not a doctor, he's a lawyer, okay? So he has no qualification, in my opinion, to be in that position. But the point about him in that position is that he signs off on safety for this vaccine. So to date, he has not said it's safe and effective. What he has stated publicly is that it's reasonable to believe that the vaccine may be safe and effective. Well, when we take the VAERS report data and look at it, and a whistleblower just came out too, and she has signed a declaration in that suit, which you guys can look up. She does data analysis for Medicaid, Medicare fraud. She's looked into this and stated that cross-referencing Medicaid, Medicare systems with the VAERS data and correlating it, that we can conservatively estimate that these numbers that are reported through VAERS can be multiplied by a conservative estimate of 5. We have research that goes back to the 90s and most recently that states that only 1 to 10% of all adverse vaccine reactions get reported to VAERS. So if we put that into context, we have, you know, almost over half a million people having an adverse reaction, multiply it by 5. We have 12,000 people that have died because of the vaccine, multiply it by 5. Okay, in this country, we on average lose about 2.6 million annually to all deaths combined. So if you look at just adverse reactions there, we're already up into those numbers. So please take the time to do the research. This vaccine is not safe and we shouldn't be forcing it on people. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you for hearing us. And I just want to congratulate everybody in the audience. I know we're not supposed to address them, but I'm really proud of everyone who came here. And actually, this is the first time some people have even been to a Board of Supervisors meeting. If you're wondering why I'm wearing this gold star, it's because it represents what happened to the Jewish people during the war. And they had them tagged with the gold star, and I feel like that's what's going to happen to us. Those of us who refuse to take the vaccine. I'm not going to repeat all the wonderful presentations that were done previously, but one thing I do want to say is I read the letter that the board has proposed, and I have a couple questions or suggestions about the letter. First of all, the letter needs to be updated, because in the letter you say that they have that healthcare workers have the option of having the COVID test done twice a week and wearing masks and not having to have the injection. But that has changed as of August the 5th. The California Public Health Director has said that no, you will have to have the jab, no testing. Only a few people will be exempt. So you need to look that up. That was August the 5th. And that only, as Lori mentioned, that if you have a medical excuse or religious excuse. And from what I'm reading and talking to physicians, that if you get a physician who will give you a medical excuse, say for instance, if you are immune compromised or you have anaphylactic shock, you're very allergic, it's very hard to get that exemption because they're threatening doctors with losing their license. And if the doctor writes too many medical exemptions, they're going to go after that doctor. This is un-American. I don't recognize the America I live in. The other suggestion I would have for the letter is that I don't know if you heard about the interview on CNN. I normally don't watch CNN, but it was all over the interview. It was all over the internet. I watched the interview, and the interview was with the director of the CDC. I think her name is Walensky. I may not pronounce it correctly. And what she actually said is, and I'm going to read you exactly what was said on the interview. The interview was done on August the 5th. With Wolf Blitzer, and the CD director Rochelle Walensky said, "Our vaccines are working exceptionally well." That was a quote, and another quote, "They continue to work well for Delta with regards to severe illness and death." And then there's a hyphen and it says, "They prevent it." But what they can't do anymore is prevent transmission. And I would like that in the letter, because that's the issue here with our healthcare workers. The reason they're being told that they have to have the jab is because they're going to protect the patients. But if they have the injection, and this and her statement says that does not prevent transmission, then it's a moot point. Also, people that are going to be on the call have asked me to ask the Board of Supervisors that when you do present, would you please put the microphone in front of your face, because they have trouble hearing you and understanding you. So anyway, they asked me to do that for. And I have this for Wendy. This is the bill that I mentioned before that Kevin Kiley has introduced. He introduced it on February the 12th. And so far, he does not have any co-sponsors. And so I'm asking you to ask our Senator Kevin Brian Daly and his wife, Megan Daly, to co-sponsor this bill, and I'll give copies to Wendy.
What's the number of the bill?
It's 327, introduced on February the 12th. No co-sponsors. We have 9 Republicans in the Senate, and we have 19 Republicans in the Assembly. So they need to get behind this bill and co-sponsor it.
For John Tribble. Good morning.
Good morning. I want to thank you guys for giving us the opportunity to address you. I'm John Tribble. I'm an emergency physician. I live here in Siskiyou County. I've lived here for over a decade. And I just want to let you know, there's many physicians out there that are being pressured, intimidated, coerced, and at the threat and the fear of losing our livelihoods. I have 4 children. I have a daughter in the Air Force that is also going to have to make this choice. And nobody should be having to make this choice of a personal decision of what you put in your body versus your career, your livelihood, your family. And there shouldn't be any intimidation. You know, I've read your letter and I appreciated it. But I think, you know, now we're getting more serious where there's no option out of it. And even when we do have an option out of it, it's punitive, it's unreasonable, it's time-consuming. I'm forced to, if I opt out, I'm forced to get tested twice weekly to an approved lab, and I have to pay for that. I'm getting pressure and intimidation from those above me, authority above me in my organization. I fear that if I make the decision to not get vaccinated, I may lose my job. I may not be able to keep up with getting twice weekly testing. It takes away my freedom. I'm not able to travel, for instance, when I'm off. I'm basically forced at home with no known timeline for this. Like, we could be doing this forever, and how many more vaccinations are we going to be required to get for how long? We don't have any long-term safety data or efficacy data on this vaccine. There's any number of reasonable, logical reasons for somebody to not want to get vaccinated when you do a risk analysis, risk-benefit analysis versus the vaccine versus COVID. Many people are at very low risk from COVID, and there's a lot of unknown risk in this vaccine. So I would just encourage you to be as strong and stand up for the rights of people, stand up for informed consent, stand up for our freedoms as strongly as you possibly can. Thank you.
All right, at this time I'm going to go to callers online. If you have a comment for this topic, please press *9 on your cell phone. You can be recognized.
Caller Jonathan Dixon, you may unmute. It's your turn to speak.
Battery 80%.
Hello. Yeah, thank you.
Good morning.
So at the start of this 14 days to flatten the curve, we were showing footage of people dropping dead on the streets in China. And that's what I expected to see happening here too. But instead what we saw is that hospitals were paid more to report something as COVID care or COVID deaths. So that creates a perverse incentive for anything to be labeled as COVID. People have always been getting sick. They've always been dying. Now they're just being labeled as COVID. Of course, they're saying, well, the vaccinated can still get COVID. They can still spread COVID. We were told masks are not needed. No, they are needed. Well, 2 or 3 would be best. No, if you get vaccinated, you don't need masks. Well, yes, you still do need. No, I don't know how. What we really need to look at is our education system to understand why anyone would believe what we're being told to believe. And that's really all I have to say, so thank you.
Could you state your name for the record, please?
Sure. Jonathan Dixon, D-I-X-O-N.
Thank you. People still complain. Next caller.
Vicki Gold, you may unmute. It's your turn to speak.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you very much. I would like to concur with everything that the emergency physician, Louise, Agliato and the previous speaker, Jonathan Dixon, just stated. I think the letter does need to be amended in those ways that she mentioned. Also call to your attention that 150 sheriffs in San Francisco have decided that they will either retire early or they will resign because of the mandate. This is a clot shot. This is not a vaccine. We have to stop calling it a vaccine. Has been tested, contrary to what the publicity says. It was tested on rats and monkeys, and 100% of them died. This is gene therapy. This is not safe. There's a group called Mama Bears, and they have t-shirts that they're going around to various cities, and it says freedom over fear. I think we need to congratulate those people who are standing up today. I think we should all order those t-shirts, freedom over fear, in so many ways. It's actually an IQ test, in my opinion. If you've left the big city and moved to a rural area, you've passed. And I thank you very much for stepping up on this most important issue. It actually, I believe there will be mass migration from urban areas as they cannot live with either 5G or with this triggered graphene oxide. I also want to speak about SB 10 and implore you to please put this on your next agenda. SB 10 is a bill that is removing all local control from jurisdictions like cities and counties. It's not constitutional. It will allow the end of single-family homes. It will prevent any initiative process. It will impact agricultural areas. Every single zoning area will be mandated by the state, and by right, they will be able to develop anywhere up to 10 units plus 4. So it is completely destroying local control. It also allows high density and high fire zones. It will be struck down by the court, according to major law firms with expertise in CEQA. Developers would not be required to provide important infrastructure like water, sewer, roads, parking, schools, and parks. And it is a one-size-fits-all government from the top, which does not suit our rural area or any area. If they follow the money, because speculators sponsored by BlackRock, Blackstone, building industry, and NIMBY groups are supporting this, there is no protection for any areas. If we have CCNRs, that doesn't matter. Groups dedicated to affordable housing are opposing the bill because there's nothing in the bill which wraps itself in the claim of affordable housing. It actually will be an attack and cause gentrification, especially in communities of color. It's most important that you put this on. They will be dealing with this as soon as they're back in session. And I think this is something extremely important for our quality of life. Thank you.
Thank you. Next caller.
Number ending in 0599, it's your turn to speak. You may unmute.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Kendra Sonido, and I live in Big Spring. We, the community, again, see the injustice in the reporting and skewing of the information about what is happening in Siskiyou County, from the criminal activities towards poor farmers and racism. Local media, even this book, they take a picture of them on the internet, no way resembling the reality of what exists in this area. Now we see on the news a judge who undoubtedly has never been here, attempting to pressure our county to look the other way with laws. This mediation appears to be nothing less than bargaining to circumvent the laws by pressuring our county. Does law bend with the wind, or is it the cornerstone of democracy equally applied? Do we obey only those laws that benefit us and ignore all others? This community has asked for only two things, law and water. Law to be followed and the water to be used, not for unlawful purposes. We invite this judge to come to Siskiyou County and see for herself what is existing here. And I ask, and we ask as a community, that the county remains true to the rule of law, respectively. Thank you.
Thank you, Ginger. Next caller.
Number ending in 0599. It is your turn to speak. Please go ahead and unmute.
Wasn't that the last caller?
Hello?
Good morning.
Good morning. This is Charlene Watkins. I absolutely agree with Ms. Amito on the issue out here and this judge and the false narrative that the media is doing with the beautiful rural picture they had of a wonderful green fields and a tractor. And that's what the attorney was representing on the media. It's absolutely disgusting. So we need to stand firm. I appreciate what the Board of Supervisors and the Sheriff's Department is doing. On the other issue, which had to do with this treatment, this COVID treatment, I have two sons that are in public service, and I'm very, very concerned about them being forced to have this vaccination. Everyone should have a choice. We have a choice when it comes to the flu shot, which is a vaccination. As far as this treatment goes, God only knows what it is at this point because it's not proven. So I appreciate the board sending the letter to our lovely governor, and I do agree that some of the things in the letter need to be revamped, and appreciate all the people that have commented on this. Thank you so much. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Next caller.
Noah.
Okay. With that, does anyone else wish to speak in the audience? Seeing none, I'll move on to consent agenda, and there are a number of things we're going to pull. Oh, excuse me, we got one more. I forgot. Mr. Dean, has a public comment.
Yes, I do, Honorable Board and Chairman. Just here to give an update on the public trust doctrine concerns that we have with Scott Valley. As you're aware, there's a lawsuit against the county for not taking consideration of well constructed in Scott Valley. So this is something we are working on addressing. There's been a contract established with Larry Walker and Associates to construct a model of basically well extraction and stream flow depletion.
So for the audience, you're referring to the ELF lawsuit, the Earth Liberation, Earth, yeah, that's what it is. The
Environmental Law Foundation,
versus
the state of
Freudian slip, so.
The Water Board, which was appealed by the county assist you and failed. Right. Yes, thank you for that.
Okay.
At any rate, that model was presented to the Board of Supervisors, I believe, on May 18th by Dr. Folia. We're all present. So I'll let you know that the community development has been overtasked with many fire situations and other concerns, COVID and so forth. I would have preferred to get this information to you, presentation and with recommendations on how to proceed with the public trust concern over Scott Valley. We'll be scheduling September 21st to do that for you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Looking for items to give public comments? What?
Would now be a good time to get an update on fire activities?
Yes. We're not done with public comment yet. So we'll get to the letter in a minute. That's what you're asking about. Okay.
Good morning, Rachel Smith. I'm the Forest Supervisor of the National Forest. I'm joined by CAL FIRE Chief Anzo. I was hoping to give you a brief update on fire activity impacting the county right now.
Down.
I'm also a little bit short.
I didn't say that.
But don't underestimate her.
So I wanted to give you a quick update on some of the fire activity that we have going on in the county. As of yesterday, we currently have four different incident management teams in Siskiyou County that are responding to more than 27 fires. So they are grouped into a couple of different incidents, and I was just going to give you a brief overview and then see if there's any other information that you're looking for from us in terms of our activity. I'll start on the southwest portion of the county with the river complex. As of this morning, we've had a couple of active days on the river complex. And this is a total of 24 fires, with 12 of them that are still active. So we've put out or gotten line around 12 of them, and 12 of them are still active. The last 2 days, each day we've gotten about 1,500 acre growth with the fires, and they're particularly spreading south towards the Shasta Trinity National Forest. As of this morning, we're sitting at 28,000 acres, 2,000 acres growth over the last 24 hours. We're continuing to see a lot of fire activity. Our major challenges there, we have great support from our state partners. So CAL FIRE has been just tremendous in terms of helping us. But there's so many fires going on right now that we're finding it difficult to get resources. So we have a Type 1 and a Type 2 team that are both working on that fire. And there's public meetings every couple of days. They're on Facebook Live. Also, just wanted to share, we're doing a really good job with point protection. And again, have to say thank you to OES and also CAL FIRE for the help with that. We've been able to protect all the structures within the fire perimeter. The other fire that I wanted to briefly give you an update on, and I know you don't have too much time for us, but in terms of our progress with the Antelope Fire, and I have that on a different screen. With the Antelope Fire, it's also had an active couple of days. So while the river fire is still developing in terms of adding acreage and having a pretty low level of containment, we're up to 28% containment on the Antelope Fire. The team is a team out of the Southwest, but they're doing a really great job on the eastern portion of the county. They're integrating really well, and on that portion of the county, we're getting great support from industry and also CAL FIRE, so we're working very closely. Though we are not in unified command, because the primary area that's being threatened is, of course, federal, and of course, we're paying the paycheck for it, as is appropriate, we're getting tremendous support in terms of resource availability, both from industry and also from CAL FIRE. So that fire is currently at 42,301 acres, up to 27% containment overnight. We've got 700 folks on that fire. Our hope is that we will be able to get around it and have it taken care of in the next week and a half or so. The third fire that I wanted to mention to you specifically is the McCash Fire. So this is an emerging incident. It's just on the edge of the Shasta, well, it's on the edge of the Six Rivers and the Klamath National Forests. We have another Type 2 incident management team that's just taking control of fire. So they're just getting their feet under them. This is their second operational period. And that's burning in the Yukonam area, so it's in a pretty remote area. One of my predecessors told me if there's an area of the Klamath National Forest that doesn't have roads, there's a reason for that, and there's no roads in that area. So we've got a bunch of hotshots on that are very good at really remote, difficult terrain, but we expect that one to be with us for the next couple of weeks to come. So I wanted to provide that brief update and then see if my counterpart had any updates for you.
Yeah, Phil Lanzo, the Deputy Chief of CAL FIRE Siskiyou, also your County Fire Warden, also the Ob Area Coordinator for the Siskiyou Operational Area. So just real quickly, we've been working cooperatively with the Klamath National Forest and the Shasta Trinity National Forest on several incidents, providing them with the resources that we have available to us to help assist them be successful in containing these fires as small as we can. We've been very successful in several of these incidents in keeping them small. And for example, yesterday we had several fires that occurred within our county, 10 up and down I-5 alone. Those were contained very small within the median, thank God. And also one at the northwest side of Wairika just yesterday, which was contained at 1.6 acres. So we still have to maintain our ability to initial attack fires and be successful in keeping those as small as we can, but we're assisting as best as we can with the resources we have available right now with the Klamath National Forest fires.
Thank you for that one in Wairika. That could have been got around that pretty quick.
Yes.
Thank you. The rest of my board, I'd like to say too, that thank you for the update on the Forest Service. We're just not, we have a really good working relationship, and I appreciate that. Much more so than the other two forests that are in the county. But you know, there's always room for improvement. Maybe they'll come around. Anyway, I appreciate your engagement.
Question to the chair.
Sure.
Thank you for being here. But I guess two questions for you. I was asked by a constituent just yesterday. Back in the day when we used to log and we had crews out on the landscape, you know, fire wasn't as bad as we see today. But the question was, is or does the Forest Service allow to cut green timber to build a fire line because that green timber is marketable versus letting it burn and then it being unmarketable? Is that a consideration that the Forest Service still maintains or not?
So when we're suppressing a fire, anything's on the table in terms of clearing anything we need to clear. Unfortunately, that also includes some loss of merchantable timber. So that's both, particularly on the Antelope Fire to the east, we've been losing both federal merchantable timber, so timber that we could sell in the future, including a few timber sales during the tenant fire in Antelope that we plan to have go on the market this summer, but also some industry land has also been lost. We've actually lost a total of 1,600 acres, which has been a pretty major concern because that's a huge driver for our county. But the answer is yes.
So
when
you
have a fire,
green timber in
absolutely.
The place of the fire coming, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
To get it on the ground. Okay. And then, and I would just advocate that you have your counterpart there. You're going to see that we're going to be hopefully doing a resolution here to require unified command. But I would maintain that it would be far cheaper to bring them on board quicker to put that fire out than paying the bill. And I know the law of a fire is around $40 million plus whatever else is going on. So I think there's money to be saved by allowing your counterpart to come in more quickly.
Sir, I would completely agree with you that that us working closely together on very rapid initial attack of fires is in everybody's best interest, and that's definitely my focus. So since being here, I've only been here since May, so I know I'm a newcomer here, and I will have to admit, I moved most recently from Southern California, but I hope you won't hold that against me. We just closed on a house here in Wairika last week, so we're really eager to be part of the county. But I see a lot of value in being really proactive in terms of wildland fire. I've worked as a firefighter since the mid-90s, as a hotshot in Oregon, and then also a smoke jumper here in California. And I really value our partnership with Cal Fire. This relationship here is incredibly important, particularly because and forgive me for briefly getting on the soapbox. You can turn on the bell if you want me to stop. But particularly because when everybody's on fire around the state, the only people that we have to depend on are folks here in Siskiyou County. So one of the things we've been talking about is how we can activate more of a militia of local folks who have the experience and skills we need. Because we know that if there's big fires going on elsewhere, it's going to be hard for us to convince both our regional office and the national level to prioritize our incidents. And that's why I'm looking to create local capacity for that.
Thank you.
That's a good point. So, Phil, I have a question for you. You know,
well, it's agenda. I see the council getting a little nervous here.
It is agenda?
Well, we have a letter of unified command, which is kind of what we're talking about. Right?
Okay, so that's what we're dealing with now? Besides public comment?
Fire agenda.
Yeah.
Okay. Good enough. I hate to be the hall monitor. I just makes me nervous.
I got the gavel. Go ahead.
Anyways, Phil, one of the things that came up, or a thought comes to mind when we talk about resources. I know, like, the county road department has dozers. Do we utilize that at all? And is there a possibility? You know, I don't expect any able-minded men to show up and fight a fire, but I do think that if we have equipment that we could be used, that we could utilize that. Is that possible?
Yeah, we've been using private equipment, but the private equipment goes through a training course, so they are certified to be on the fire line for safety reasons, and so we would have to provide training for those individuals on the county department to be able to use them on the line. And we've had discussions about that, and it's pretty extensive what that training requirement would be for the governmental entity. So
I'm looking at it from a minimal standpoint. I'm just thinking a dozer, because when we talk about lack of resources, it's not like you can just bring a dozer up here. Well, we have one parked in a corporation yard, if you will, knowing that with the way we're dealing with fires, it's lack of resources.
Absolutely.
And so just want to put that on your radar so you can maybe
follow.
Absolutely.
We've had some discussions, and private industry has been more than willing to lend us their resources and actually put those resources on the incidents. Most of those dozers are private hires, and they're already within our system, so it makes it easy for us to utilize them for line construction. And one more thing I wanted to throw out there is our assistance and partnership with our local government cooperators. They've been assisting us left and right on these incidents throughout the state, and especially here locally, with an aggressive initial attack and augmenting our resources when they're able to. Most of those departments are volunteer, as you know, and they're struggling to find volunteer firefighters to maintain those numbers. But they're doing the best they can. They've got resources on the river complex right now.
Thank you. So I think we probably exhausted you and council getting pretty nervous. But there are two items agendized. It's E and F in the consent agenda here regarding fire. So thank you. And we'll move on to the next item on our agenda.
Thank you.
So consent agenda, I'm looking for items that need to be pulled. And I believe the CAO has a few.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Angela Davis, County Administrator. There is a request to pull items A, B, F, and I.
And through the chair,
yes.
I'd like to pull E.
Okay. Any more?
Move to approve the balance of the consent agenda, which is minus A, E, F, I, and E. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That's correct.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Wendy?
Okay. Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobsett?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Haupt?
Aye. All right, I'm going to do A first, a letter to Governor Newsom. Who's, did you pull that?
I did not pull that.
Okay.
It was a matter of discussing any changes that you may.
Okay.
Require on the
very
letter
good.
Prior
think,
to sending.
I think there are a few.
I assume so.
Yeah.
Some updates. You expect me to articulate in my brain. One is the August 5th, I believe, that I wrote down change in the testing requirement. It's been eliminated.
Do we know that to be the case?
I haven't seen it, okay, but I do know it from a local facility that has not provided the testing as of yet, and it's required to report to work tomorrow.
Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator. I will double check on the August 5th item that was brought up by the public, and if that was changed, as the public alluded to, we can put that in the letter. We can, amend the letter to reflect that.
So you can you bring that back to us for incorporation before we close business today?
Yes.
Okay. And I have an email inquiring as to whether that changed. I'm trying to get the details. So.
Okay. We're just trying to make sure we've got the order, correct. The board probably has some things they want to say. Did I get wrong?
Well, I think the transmission now that's coming out with regard to those that have had the vaccine, I don't know if that's something to bring in the letter or not, but if, as we've heard today, if healthcare workers are receive the vaccine and now are transmitters into the very, patients that we're trying to protect, I'm not following, if that makes sense. So I if we could check that out as well. It's already in the letter with regard to those that have had the virus and have received what is natural immunity. I think that that's an important statement in there as well. I know that there's been dialogue about what we say reconsider. There's been dialogue about putting a boat. I think bottom line for all of you there, you know, September 14th is going to kind of make or break the deal on how you vote. So I think that's everything that I'm pushing, even to our assembly member and senator. How do I say it? It is what it is coming from the governor. We're basically communicating what our constituents are telling us to the governor, but a lot of it's going to have to do with how the vote goes on September 14th.
I guess, you know, I want to address this too. I have four immediate family members in the healthcare industry, all facing the same thing. One of them works in Texas at the Methodist Hospital, where it was taken to court, and unfortunately had failed there. And my sister-in-law was forced to get the vaccination to maintain employment. And what's I have a lot of concerns. One of the concerns I have is ripping families apart. And knowing for her, she had no choice. She's got two children that are dependent on her, that are both medically compromised, that require near full-time care. And so she has no choice, even though she's had COVID before in, from the hospital she works in. I know, you know, I don't, whether you get this or not is your choice. That's where I stand. No government should be telling me this. And I took an oath to protect the Constitution and the principles in it. This is not constitutional, the way I practice the Constitution. I'll do what I can as a board member, but we learned pretty quickly that we can't sue ourselves, which was the effect of us litigating the state. And we learned the punitive measures that were launched against Placer County when they attempted that this last fall, where the governor sent, according to their term, his goon squad, to shut down businesses in that county. This is not a country I recognize either, and not one I care to enjoy much longer, truthfully. I don't know. It's personal choices, and I respect the best I can your personal choice, and I'll protect it as best I can from where I sit here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else? So you'll bring that back then?
We'll do. Okay. This afternoon.
With the revisions?
Correct.
All right.
Well, so it's going to come back for?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Then I'll just, it's only fair since we're decision makers. I will not be voting to support this. So I definitely get the other side of the equation. I do understand how tough it is to have to make a decision whether to get a shot if I'm so opposed to that and or employment. But I will tell you that I've gotten the shot. And I don't feel any, I feel better for it actually. You know, there's plenty of people on the other side. Half this country has gotten the shot. It, you know, again, to me, it's my dad, who was a career Marine. I have no doubt that he was ordered to get the shot. He's going to get the shot like the military is being ordered to do it right now. You know, again, it's still a personal choice. You do have that choice. I get that it's a difficult choice if you have to put food on the table. But at the end of the day, you still have that choice. So I do think, and if you look at the healthcare system, it's crashing in a lot of places. Austin, Texas is a good example. You know, and I feel for the healthcare workers. My daughter, who's a nurse, is involved in that line of work. It's tough right now. It's brutal. But how long have we been involved with this? Far too long. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay.
How you
doing? Item B.
Me again. Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator. For this item, there are just a couple of changes on the resolution declaring, the board's resolution declaring its intent to sell certain county-owned property. Number 5 on the second page, It should read a deposit of $5,000, so in replacing six. On the notice inviting proposals, the title should read the purchase of surplus real property located along Railroad Park Road in Dunsmuir.
Which one was that one?
The notice inviting proposals.
So not the agreement?
Correct. And I have clean versions that I'll send you.
Yeah, if you're going to clean ones out, I just want to make sure I'm not missing something. There we go.
You should have checked my deposit, that's what my comment says.
So on the written word at number five, a deposit of $5,000 instead of, I believe right now it reads, a deposit of $6,000.
It's written out six in line.
Yes.
Okay, so you know the changes.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And okay, so in the notice inviting proposals, I found that.
Yes, it should read the purchase of surplus real property located along Railroad Park Road in Dunsmuir.
Railroad Park Road.
Yes.
Okay.
And I apologize one more. The bid to purchase county property.
Okay.
In the first line, it should read, purchasing real property located along Railroad Park Road.
Okay,
that's it.
Move to approve.
Just revision.
Second.
Correct.
Okay. Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbsef?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Howe?
Aye. All right, item 7E, Unified Command.
So on the resolution, I propose to add a bit of language at the now, therefore, be it resolved that the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors requires that a Unified Command be invoked, and I would add at that point immediately upon all fire starts on federal land, and then continue on.
Which whereas was that? That's
right. It's the now therefore be it resolved.
All of it.
And that was all fire starts on
federal land.
Federal land. Thank you.
I don't agree.
Give me a better version. Tell me your. I mean, you've done that, so.
Yeah, I don't think Cal Fire wants to go in the middle of a bully creek to fight a fire, nor are they equipped to do that.
Okay. So how do we bypass this delay?
Originally, when I looked at this, I had proposed some language that within influence of the community at risk.
Okay.
Because the what I ponder over in my head is how each agency is equipped to fight fire. And knowing the Forest Service will protect structures, but once a structure is involved, they're not trained or properly equipped to do that.
Okay.
In fact, policy prevents them from doing that. So I think it has more teeth, if you will, if we have it within some influence of a community at risk. And not all of our communities are listed as communities at risk, which I think would cure the issue. I think that we're wrestling with is the limited resources and being able to throw everything at it.
Okay. And the only reason I bring this up is that, I mean, there was a delay factor in the lava fire.
Yeah.
Even though that was a wilderness fire initially, and that's how the department was going to treat it, it was a community fire because of the terrain that it was in and the fire corridor that it was in that threatened the whole South County. So what I'm after is not to have that delay factor, because I don't think it was but, what, 5-6 days before CAL FIRE had Unified Command. The intent, obviously, is to put the dang fire out and not create a fire industry that keeps burning. And that's not a criticism. We're sick and tired of having this every year after year after year after year, and it's got to stop. So I'm open to whatever language. I want something, I like what's there, but I also want to get to not having another one that does threaten communities, that there's a delay factor because, and we know the tussle that goes on there.
Perhaps a suggestion.
Sure.
To get at what that last sure. issue, because to me that's a different issue, in that in our declaration of emergency that we do, because of wildfire, that's based on fuels conditions and, mm-hmm. and hazardous situations in the forest, that we would maybe revise that to include years like this, the county opposes managed fire and requires suppression, which wasn't done in the case that you're talking about.
I'm open to whatever. I'm just sick and tired of this happening.
Yeah, the reason I bring that up too is that the group that I work with, including three retired chiefs, we have been pounding on the chief's office since early this spring about taking managed fire off the table, and it wasn't until last week that the agency finally responded, which to us is too lethargic, and given the conditions.
Okay. So leave this alone, is what you're saying?
Well, I think we have the communities at risk piece.
Okay, that's fine.
To that.
That's fine.
So the influence of the community at risk.
So I certainly see the intent, and I hope that there is going to be, as we always hope, better coordination, whatever. You know, I'd use the Dixie Fire as an example. That wasn't on Forest Service, it started elsewhere. Cal Fire, I think, is the command, so it goes both ways, right? You know, I think at the end of the day, which is why I brought up about lack of resources, you know, where's our skin in the game? Making sure we have equipment available. You know, at the end of the day, we're in a new world here with fires, and it's far exceeds what I think it should always be unified command, to the extent the phone should be automatically picked up. Are you ready? Because with this is going to happen, type of thing. So I'm okay moving forward, but it's not with any intent to push back on the Forest Service. I think we all have to raise the bar and our game, if you will. Thank you.
And I guess what I would say too is that knowing the policy as well as I do, unified command invokes a cost sharing between the agencies, and it kind of unravels a regional agreement. So if we could improve this going forward, I'd appreciate the feedback from both agencies, because it's not our intent, I don't think, to undo the statewide cost-sharing agreement and the JPA, DPA, not JPA, the DPA assignments as they are in the state, because that's how cost apportionment is negotiated. Our more immediate intent, I think, as if I understand, is immediate working together and throwing everything we have at some of these fires to keep them small and put them out. That helps. So I'm sure we'll be in contact and discussion. Sound good?
Yeah. I just want the fire out.
Yeah.
Quick.
Yeah.
Okay?
I don't want to get into the cost sharing policy of this stuff. That's the
governor. In regards to skin in the game, you can't underestimate the value of the local volunteer fire department with that 3,500 gallon water tender that you can get there and back at the Cal Fire and Forest Service guys. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's where our skin in the game is. Even those are over there, local departments, and how we support them.
So I'll move to approve with the incorporation of within the influence of the community.
Sure. That's fine.
Sure.
Yeah.
I just want to nail down what the proposed amendments are. As Supervisor Kopp said, I think you have a proposed amendment. I take it you're withdrawing your proposed amendment, and we're replacing the proposed amendment with the addition of the phrase communities at risk. Can we, maybe I'm the only one, but I'm not positive where we're supposed to be inserting that.
Within, invoked, but right here, still I think within the now therefore be resolved, unified command be invoked.
Whenever a fire start is within a community at risk.
Yeah.
And then
I think the influence over community.
Yeah, yeah. And then the rest stays the same.
And there was also reference to opposing during drought years managed fire practices. Yeah. Is that something to add or not?
No, that's something that comes back. Yeah, I've talked about putting it in our emergency declaration.
Got it. Okay. Got it. Yeah. Okay. So the only change proposed is communities at risk after the word invoked.
Yes.
Got it.
Good.
Through the chair, Angela Davis, County Administrator. Resolution 21-77 is being brought before you today, which is with regards to the catastrophic wildfire. So we can modify that at that time for okay. that item, if that pleases the board.
Pleases me.
That's what I'm here to do.
All right. So I have a motion. Second.
There is a public comment.
Caller online, there's public comment. You're recognized for 3 minutes.
Caller ending in 0599, you may unmute and it's your turn to speak.
Good morning. I think it's morning, yes.
Battery 80%.
I was just listening here about this unified command. With the firefighting, I think this is a wonderful idea. I know that both my sons were volunteers for Grenada and my older son from Montague, and he was on the Klamathon fire, and he just, one of the things that he said is that there was absolute lack of communication between each of the firefighting responding agencies. So I think this is a wonderful idea, and I just want to let you know I appreciate you doing this, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
And caller, if I can get your name, please.
Charlene Watkins.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we have a vote.
Okay. So if I have it.
Yeah, just to belabor the point. In order for this to read properly, I think the modification we want to make is to have to protect communities at work risk. So that it would read, now therefore be it resolved that Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors requires that a unified command be invoked to protect communities at risk and fully utilized between the United States Forest Service, CAL FIRE, etc. Is that the proposed?
No.
No? Okay.
That's back to being all comprehensive again. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
It has to be within influence of a community at risk.
So the only addition is to say communities at risk after invoked.
Within influence of communities at risk.
Within influence, okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
And just to verify, that was helped as the motion maker and COPSEF as the second?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Okay. Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor COPSEF?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Thank you.
So, Wendy, I'm probably going to take a break at the end of consent whenever we get there.
That works for me.
Next is item F, OES.
Angela Davis, County Administrator.
Howdy.
With regards to the resolution, which is contained within the packet, we are adding language after the be it resolved with a new paragraph with language as read, be it further resolved that all county procurement policies regarding any purchase and or services and or supplies that are needed or required during the incident are waived with the approval of the Director of Emergency Services, comma, and semicolon. And that is the completion of that language that would be added to that resolution. And then also contained within the packet is a proclamation signed by the Director of Emergency Services, Brian Shinomi. We are requesting that the board ratify that proclamation, effective today. And with that, there are no other changes.
And you informed me that McCash Fire is also included, but it's not on my copy here.
Correct. Within the resolution and within proclamation, let's see here. With regards to the resolution on the second, whereas, the second to the last line, there is a paren, including the Cronin, McCash, Summer, and Hay Press. Paren is threatening Cecilville, Somerville, and Forks of Salmon. So it is included in the resolution, as well as in the proclamation, on the third whereas, on the third to last sentence, again, it's paren, including the Cronin, McCash, Summer, and Hay Press, and paren is threatening Cecilville, Somerville, and Forks of Salmon. So it is included on
that. All right, thank you. I'm just letting the public know it is somewhere because it's not on the agenda.
Yes, correct. It is within both documents.
Yes. Thank you.
Move to approve with the amendments
exactly.
or additions.
Thank you.
We have a motion and a second, Wendy.
Okay. Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Haupt?
Aye. And I believe the next item is aye.
Correct. Angela Davis, County Administrator. Within the proclamation on the third, whereas, the statement is referring to the reaffirmation, and we are requesting to strike from 14 days and replace with 30 days. So the reaffirmation will be from 30 days. And that ends all changes to that proclamation.
Move to approve with the changes.
Second.
Okay, Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Thank you.
Next is L, Natural Resources, a letter.
Did I miss L?
We voted on all other items.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm not sure. I got so many scribbles on this agenda right now. I'm just going to state that I think it fell a little short from the standpoint of, you know, me for one, I don't know the rest of the board, but I'm opposed to any fee for entry on the public lands, mainly because the act that authorizes the fee collection is for a specific location, like a campground, etc. And when you do a fee for entry, it can be spent anywhere on that forest for whatever means that they're to spend it on. And I don't think that the agency has that discretion.
I agree. It's kind of vague how they bring it into the document. I mean, I get the campground fees in that, but the entry fee is something that is a concern. And I don't know that I could support that either. So.
Oh, Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator. I agree with your comment that the language was somewhat vague, and in this letter we do request a meeting and where we could certainly have two supervisors in that meeting as well to discuss these proposed fees and get a better understanding of what is included.
Yeah, the fee retention authorization specifically designates that that collection must be spent on that facility. And that's a nebulous concept when it comes to just a fee to park on public lands.
So are you proposing any changes or opening up the dialogue with the...
Can I unvote it?
There you go, County Council.
You could make a motion to bring it back, and if the board approves bringing it back, you could do that and then modify it.
I'd like to bring this item back for reconsideration.
The deadline is the 31st.
I'm talking about today.
Oh, okay.
And that was 7L?
To make revisions.
Okay.
Correct.
I thought we were going to future dates.
No, I don't do that. A motion and a second?
Second. Are you moving your motion?
I did.
Second?
Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
Okay, Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Haupt?
Aye. Just include language that opposes a fee for entry on the public lands. That would be my suggestion in the letter.
So, I know that for me, it's, I get high use areas, but it, you know, as long as the money is directed towards that.
Yeah.
But I agree, like, just your general out of the woods type thing, yeah. Should not be a fee.
Yeah, and for high-use areas, you can designate like a trap head or something like that, but which is a facility. But This general parking permit thing came up when the fee retention was passed by Congress about 14 years ago. And this thing in particular, I believe, was litigated in the Sierra. And they actually ended up removing it. The agency removed it from their fee retention.
So do we need a motion to approve what we just did to come back, or do we wait to see it first?
Well, I think we should bring back this afternoon, okay, along with everyone.
Two of them you're going
to bring back. Mr. Chair, do you know the name of that case?
No, it was the off-road group that, you know the case, don't you, Theo, that I'm talking about, the off-road group that litigated the public lands entry fee. Come on, you were working in D.C. at the time.
Sorry.
I put you on the spot.
I was thinking
Blue
about
Ribbon Coalition.
Okay.
Litigated that.
I just know sometimes if you cite the court case, it strengthens the letter. If you're receptive to that, you can
sure.
Letter the case.
Yeah,
for identification of it.
If Elizabeth can find it before she brings it back.
If not, it's not a yeah. Hold me up.
Okay.
Okay. Poor supervisor, I don't know better. I'm just turning the issues to be in the OGC. That's the general counsel. Okay, we're going to take a break.
Did we do E?
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah.
I believe so.
Yeah, good. Cross it up.
Okay.